There it is. Okay, so currently the intro is playing. I'm going to turn this up just slightly for our listeners. Okay, Brock, go ahead.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, for I am not in charge anymore. I have been dethroned. I have been deposed from my station. And yet, it is where we still simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We have a show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations remotely for your entertainment.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, I've got New Year's projects and goals and books. Today in the studio, we have Guthrie Straw of Pedal Dream.
Hello.
Steph Routh of Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This?
Hello.
The podcast you all should be listening to.
Oh, you're great.
And from the book about urban cycling, aptly titled Urban Cycling, we have Maddie Carlson.
Hi there.
Hey. And on the phone, we have Brock Dittus.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, you know what? I was turning Brock down and I was turning you up. How about that?
There you
That's
go.
That's okay. That's acceptable.
Anyhow.
you get to do that now.
Yeah. I get to screw around and screw up with the sound. So, Brock, you're in Boston. Anything you want to say to our listeners out there?
I rode transit today for the first time since I got here. I think I made the wrong choice in not shipping my bicycle out here because it would have been fun to ride around. And the weather was great. It was on the Christmas holiday itself, December 25th, it was 70 degrees, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really, really warm.
Not a white Christmas for you guys.
No. Unless you count the salt stains on my shirt from trying to sleep that night and not being able to.
How was transit? Did you have any good conversations?
Ask the question again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I heard you. Did you say you took transit for the first time?
Yes.
How was that?
It was great. So I've taken transit many times in Boston, but I also I did not ride on a bus or a subway until today. And Adele and I went to call on some old friends, and we went to the charming town of Waltham.
I have never heard of this place.
Neither had I. It's nice.
What does it have to recommend?
The number 70 bus line goes through there.
Ooh.
So, yeah. You can take the bus, and it's a nice way to warm up, because now it's actually 32 degrees, and it's just about to freeze.
Nice.
We're supposed to get some snow and ice, I think.
So it's just about to be an actual regular winter, is what you're saying.
Totally, yeah. Yep. Just like the rest of the country experiences on a regular basis.
Except for Texas.
Yeah, hey, what are you guys up to tonight?
Well, just recording a show, you know, like we do.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to let you get to it.
Yeah, do it.
I'll probably hang up so that you can, you don't have to babysit me. But I look forward. I wait with bated breath.
All right. Just to let you know, there are several beers here that Maddie brought over just for you. And so now we're going to have to drink them all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you know, get to it. I want to hear Aaron Flores sloppy by the end of this show.
I'm going to get so tore up. All right, man. Well,
you bet.
Thanks for doing the intro with us.
Hey, happy Xmas.
Thank you. We'll see you later.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. Yeah,
we live in the future. Technology.
How about
he is
that?
On the other coast.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? We just talked to him.
Time zones be damned. Well, I guess time zones will still apply. Yeah. But
I just remember having a pen pal when I was a kid. Like, in Russian, like, there was only one way you could talk to them, and that was via a mail carrier. Or multiple mail carriers. And now it's like, yeah, we'll just call them.
Do you still have a pen pal?
No. You know what? I lost track of her after 2 years. Huh. I don't know what happened to Olga Nabulina. But if you're out there, Olga, I would love to know what's going on.
Does it also coincide with the fall of the Soviet Union?
It was about then. Yeah, I know.
It was about then that you lost track of
her? Yeah, I know.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I would love to hear from you, Olga Nebula.
Maybe she just, you know, she went on to bigger and better things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I back in the, you know, under the thumb of the communist regime, the only joy I could get was writing to this woman in the United States. But
then I got board games.
Now I got board games and Levi's jeans.
Yeah. Exactly. John Bon Jovi. I mean.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really have a plan for today. I just thought I would gather some people in the studio because it's a Monday night, and that's what we do here, and talk about the year. And then I heard Maddie was in town, and
yay!
So, Maddie, I thought I would get in contact
Thank
with you.
Thank you. Perfect.
And you're here promoting your book.
Yeah, and visiting friends.
And visiting friends.
Who and are also promoting
your book. I won't say which one is taking priority. But you brought some beers here.
Yeah.
Do you mind like explaining?
Oh
what
yeah,
these are?
Yeah. Well, both the beers and the fudge are kind of an example of what a magical place Portland is. How you guys might not realize that living here, but as someone who visits over the years, a lot of my friends have ended up living here, which makes me incredibly jealous. But yeah, so the beers are from my brother's best friend from college. We all went to college in Santa Barbara. He's from L.A. My brother now lives in L.A. I'd like to point out I've never lived in L.A. I love visiting, but I've never, ever, ever, ever lived in L.A. But yeah, so Brian is now a beer writer. He writes about beer, lives in Portland, and they have a VRBO, a vacation rental by owner, that I can stay in if it's not booked, beer-themed in Beervana. And when you stay there, you get a six-pack of local beers.
What?
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
So that's what I brought with me. And then the fudge I brought, my best friend from childhood, who was my pen pal after she moved away to Arizona when we were 10.
No way.
Just moved
That's
here to Portland.
That's a different oppressive regime.
Yes, yes.
Arizona.
Yeah, very, yeah. But now she just moved here to Portland.
Oh,
and
cool.
And she makes amazing fudge. So, yeah. So I have nothing really personally to do with any of the treats I brought.
Oh, this is amazing.
Nice.
You brought it.
Yes,
in
yeah.
your panniers,
but, yeah.
which
yeah.
look
but
very
But you brought
loved.
It, and that's really, that's more important.
That's right. And could you explain your necklace?
Oh, yes, I have a U-lock necklace that I wear each and every day. And it's funny because I finally got the Abus folding lock I've always wanted, but I don't think they make a necklace. Oh, and actually, this particular one, I got the Los Angeles Bike Coalition was having an online auction that I didn't tell anyone about because I saw they had this necklace. And it wasn't well promoted, and I won it.
Next year, folks.
But it's not yet the end of the year, so you can still make a tax-deductible donation to the LABC.
Wonderful, yes.
Who are awesome. Who
I have no idea who the LA
Oh, Los Angeles. Yeah.
Well, yeah. LA Bike Coalition.
Yeah, thing. Actually, they're really cool. They seem to like incubate different groups in various neighborhoods and cities. Like the Santa Monica Critical Mass I rode along with when we were down visiting last is, I can't remember the name. I think Santa Monica Bikes, maybe, is the name of the group. And they get funding through LABC and I think they existed before, and it is a really neat network. I don't know if there are other cities that operate that way, but it seems pretty amazing. Yeah.
So it's not just like central LA.
Right,
it's
yeah.
the whole greater area. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And Ms. Butler is the recently installed executive director. Is that correct? Okay.
How do you know so much about this?
Because Tamika Butler is probably going to be, hopefully, hi, Tamika, is going to be then one of the next guests on the Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This podcast. And she's also she's been doing a lot. She chatted about a number of things with Alliance for Biking and Walking on the national stage. It's like, for example, what does Vision Zero look like? You know, what can the intersection of social justice and active transportation look like in a number of different ways? I mean, she's just, I just feel like there's so much. There's also so much happening in LA in terms of transit And also in terms of bicycling, particularly
as far as like
for,
changes happening. And,
yeah. And, mm-hmm. and just advocacy movements. I just feel like that there's just so much energy around communities, community driven advocacy and intersectionality in LA. It's pretty exciting to see. I've never wanted to hang out in LA so much in my life, but the last number of years, it's really inspiring to
this
see
is
how much
this
change.
Is, yeah. This is really challenging my sort of view of what it's like to be in LA. You know, every time I think of Los Angeles, I think it's Car City, you know, and everything's, you know, centered around the central Hollywood stereotype. And as far as like a livable city, LA is like the last thing I'm thinking about.
Well,
know?
Maybe this should be one of our New Year's resolutions.
There
everyone
you go.
In this studio, we go down with Maddie to hang out with her brother. Let's all go to LA.
Let's all go to LA.
Drink all of the great beer and check out the amazing active transportation advocacy on the ground.
And speaking of beer. Yeah.
Tell I got, us about your beer.
I got me a beer of the root variety right now. Handcrafted steelhead root beer from the Beer Mongers on 11th and Division. And we visited there just earlier because they are good enough to sponsor the podcast here. And Steph, you sort of pre-gamed and got yourself a couple ciders.
Yes.
There. What did you grab there?
Well, I got Cascadia Cider Workers United.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they still had some of that, huh?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
You know about this?
So this is...
Did you, like, dry them out one
no,
time?
No, it's
I want all of the ciders.
Yesterday, I was talking to somebody, apparently down the grapevine, they had... And this is like total hearsay, so take it with a grain of salt. But apparently they had misestimated how much alcohol content one of their ciders would have. And so they had permitted through the OLCC for a lower alcohol content than it ended up being. And so they'd put out like a 9-point-something when it was supposed to be below a 7 or something like that. And they had to pull pretty much all of it back off the shelves. That's just what I've heard. So apparently it was pretty dang good, which means if you're drinking it, lucky you, or they got some other stuff back on the shelves there. But that's how I just heard of them the other day.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story.
Sounds like it's doing okay.
And Guthrie, what have you been up to? Like, I introduced you as from Pedal Dream.
Yep.
And I was just on the site doing my research like I do.
Oh, yeah. You're like, huh, this guy hasn't posted anything in like
says,
a while.
You're going to put out a documentary hopefully in January.
What? Yep. Of next year. Yeah, I actually had a little bit of a setback on that, but yeah. It was a great exercise in why you should have redundancy in your data storage systems.
Oh, no.
Which, to make a long story short, I lost quite a bit of the footage I had on that, so I'll have to reshoot some parts. So,
oh no,
I haven't been working as much on that as I'd wished to for this year, but I have been working a lot for Filmed by Bike recently, which is really kicking into gear right now.
Yeah.
So, basically, if you're not familiar with Filmed by Bike, you may have heard of it, may have not, but it's a wonderful film festival here in Portland each May. It's going to be the 6th through the 8th, and this year I'm their film recruiter. So we're going through combing all of the YouTube and the Vimeo and a lot of other sources and trying to get some really wonderful films for everybody for this coming year.
What do you search for?
Everything. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go about it. We've got really great volunteers this year who are working on it in conjunction with myself. And so you can search for bike, but you'll probably have videos tagged with bike uploaded like 40 times every day.
It's all I can do right now. To not get on YouTube and just
know, right?
Punch in a bike.
You either get really good at viewing things quickly, or there's other cool sort of secondary terms which you can use that are a bit more specific to genres, such as adventure tourism or cyclocross or adventure racing, that sort of thing. It just sort of depends on what you want to go at. So our team works on different search term categories, and then we also go through and look at other sources that have been submitted to other film festivals, see if there's anything we might have missed. Or
is there anybody that submits directly to you guys?
Yeah. There's quite a few, actually. We're actually doing really well on submissions this year. We still have until January 20th to get submissions in. So if you're listening and you've made a film or know somebody who does, send them over to filmedbybike.org. It's about a 2-minute process to get your film in. But yeah, it's pretty swell. And there's definitely a lot of filmmakers who, since the festival is now in its 14th year, there's people who know it happens and they'll either make a film for it and submit directly to it, or they'll sort of keep it in mind each time it comes around each year.
Right
now. If you had a dream for what, for a bike movie,
a
film.
A pedal dream, yeah. Of sorts.
A pedal dream.
Indeed. Yeah. A pedal dream. What might that look like in terms of other people's submissions?
Other people's submissions? I've always wanted to do like a bike shop love story. But
in what
could you
way?
Explain?
Oh, just like a couple shops in town. Sort of like the thing with Gladys and their like relationship with
Kenton.
Yeah, Kenton Bicycle is just sort of like the cool like, hey, we're both bike shops and we're not like competing, we're just trying to like build each other up sort of thing. But since I work at Portland Bicycle Tours as my day job, my thought was there's a couple of bike tour companies in town and there could be like some sort of cutesy like relationship short movie about two tour guides falling in love with each other or something from across the fence.
Romeo and Juliet of bike tour.
Of bike tour. Yeah, maybe that's a good descriptor for it. But that would be really hilarious and wonderful to see.
Pedal bike tours in Portland, bike tours going to war. Two lovers, star-crossed.
Something like that. So if you haven't made it yet, you still have time.
Oh, I thought this was something that you were already working on.
Oh, well, I would like to. That I don't know. I always have these. I've got like a whole book full of ideas that I haven't turned into movies yet, which is probably a lot of people out there.
Sure.
But whenever something comes up, I just kind of write it down. That's one of the more recent ones.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Best moment of
2015. Oh, boy. Wow. Well, let's see.
I realized, by the way, when everyone anytime anyone asks like best moment of X or best time of this, you know, it's already put a lot of pressure on whatever you're going to say is probably not going to actually measure up. It's not really going to be the best moment.
Fair enough.
You know, you're going to say something and about like 5 minutes later, you're going to go like, oh, wait, but then there was this other thing that was way better than what I just said.
Mm. I think probably one of my best moments was I got a chance to go down to Utah with my dad back a month and a half ago and spent 10 days down there with him. So that was pretty fun. I haven't gotten a chance to go down to the desert since we were kids. So it was sort of a 20-year overdue trip back sort of father and son style. So,
okay, forget what I said earlier about, like, you know, that not actually measuring up. Because this answer actually did measure up to best moment. So
yeah, it's a good time.
Good job.
Thank you.
What was your best moment?
I don't know. I actually had to answer that question in a submission one time. And
what was the submission?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say yet.
Well, so it was for this year.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like best moment of 2015.
So share the moment.
Well, I kind of skirted the answer. I kind of skirted the question by answering like, well, there was this one time. Oh, wait, no. That was in 2013. Sorry. And that was my answer.
But you've had time in the interim.
Yeah.
I have. I don't know. Could I say, like, best moment was buying airplane tickets for an event in 2016?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Related to that, getting a passport. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm a real adult now.
Have you never had a passport?
I've never had
before?
A passport.
Wow.
I've never needed one.
So what did you get a passport for?
I am going to Mexico City with Anna.
Nice.
Next month. Yeah.
Nice.
So it doesn't happen until 2016. But maybe my best moment was in preparation for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't think there are any rules for this. You don't have to ask us, is this an okay?
Is this okay? I need approval.
Litmus test.
Yeah. By the way, Anna sends her apologies. She had to go home. She couldn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't sure if she was invited.
Oh, yeah. She's always invited. She just never takes me up on the invitation. It's kind of an opposite Lucy and Desi dynamic we got going on. I keep wanting her on the show, and she keeps wanting to not be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Lucille Ball reference
right.
there for anybody.
No, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Is this thing on?
How about you, Maddie?
My best moment of 2015? Well, now that I've had a few minutes to think about it, I know right away. Remember when it was sunny all day long, summer solstice, so far away? But we participated in the Swift Campout event.
Oh, cool.
Makers of my beautiful pannier, Swift Industries.
Which are very well loved.
Yeah.
Are they that dirty?
No, they're awesome.
I usually ride my cargo bike, so I don't, you know, actually use a bike that needs the panniers. So I didn't realize they looked so... I mean, I'm flattered that you think they're well loved, but I feel like I need to say, but I don't use them all that often. They got snowed on yesterday, I guess.
Yes.
I guess the patina
that
there.
Helps, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Patina.
But yeah, so I led one of the group Swift campouts to the only place I know to bring my cargo bike camping in Seattle on Bainbridge Island, because you ride downtown to the ferry, take a ferry to Bainbridge Island, and then it's 7 hilly miles to the campsite. And for one thing, in previous years, we go once a year, just like one time, one overnight. And this year, I think we went bike camping at least 6 times. And twice for more than just one night. So it was a huge year for us to begin with. But so we organized a Swift camp out for family bikers. And we had, I think, 60 people along. It was like 60 people in 2010. I mean, children always like expand the numbers. You know, there were 15 people on our ride today, but it's really only 3 bikes because each bike is holding 5 people. But yeah,
it's
so
like
there were
clown bike.
They are. But yeah, and like these heavy clown bikes, people rode 7 hilly miles across the island to the campsite, 2 dogs on 2 of the bikes, 20 tents. So it's 20 families. And it was so fun and amazing, and just like the wherewithal these family bikers have. I've been doing this for 8 years, so it's still hard to do like hilly miles. But people like, you know, I just got my bike. We're figuring out gear. Can I borrow a tent? Can you help me set it up? Mm-hmm. And they came along, and it was a pretty amazing event.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you get like a lot of looks from the ranger or whoever it is, the camp manager?
I really should have called them ahead of time and told them how many people we would have. It's
are they
not
a bit in a panic there?
A little bit. Yeah. It's not a state park anymore, so I'm not sure if they have that rule where they can't turn you away if you show up on a bike, like for, I think, most Washington state parks.
Was it a hike and bike site?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We usually go into the kayak inside. It's really cool. They have like this kayak area and 2 separate bike in areas. And I mean, they said as long as you can squeeze in over there, you're fine. We squeezed in fine. I'm like, we're little. Well, yeah, they were a little alarmed when we rolled in.
Like, no, it's fine. We
all with our
really
music
like each
blasting.
Other.
So that's like, even the ones with e-assist, we play music. For me, it's my hill assist because, you know, you're blasting the Kindy Rock and you can get up those hills a little better.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Kindy Rock?
Kindy Rock. Independent rockers who now have kid bands.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was indie rock for kids.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's where
I
was
guess
going.
Both. It probably applies for, both genres.
That's hilarious.
Do you have a playlist? I feel like that should be in show notes somewhere. For real.
We listen to a lot of Casper Baby Pants, the Presidents of the United States of America. So a lot of these bands, they have kids and they still do their old thing. Mm-hmm. But then they also do like the kids stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Note to self, we really do need to put a playlist on. Okay, sure, bookmarking.
Click. But yeah, so we like roll in, a whole bunch of different songs playing, dogs barking, kids shouting, and it's
did
a little intimidating.
Yeah,
I
was going to say, like, did at any point did the ranger come in and be like, okay, like, 2 of you have to go, or
no. Yeah. They were totally fine. Yeah. I mean, we're families. We're nice, and that's you know, I think it's different if you come in and expect like you're gonna like take care of us. And
right.
So yeah.
So what were some of the questions that people asked beforehand? You were mentioning that you know it's like how do we?
Oh do well, I mean, like a lot of people hadn't camped with kids at all before, and you know, just shove them in your sleeping bag with you, or we have extra tents and. Yeah, I mean, not too much, but if you see a lot of it is just seeing that all these other people are going and feeling inspired that you can do it too. Because it's not that hard once you get over, you know, your unfounded reservations. But
how did you know that that could happen?
That so many people would come?
Yeah, well, and also that, you know, there's always that, you know, as a ride leader, you know, there's all of these doubts. I don't know if you feel them. I always feel them whenever I'm like, will too many people come? Will not enough people come?
This is
will
why
there
I've
be
never
issues?
Let a ride.
Really? You've never let
I've
a
never
ride?
Never let a ride.
If I wait till an hour after, will anybody still come?
Can I tell you a little secret? Don't tell anyone this. I'm
turning off the mic.
I like leading rides, but I don't really. I'm not a leader. I'm a lamb. And I kind of force myself. I mean, I like biking so much. I want more people to bike that I force myself into this role of ride leader. But yeah, I overthink everything. And I'm so worried that not every single person is having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the two dogs, he wasn't really smiley. Is Angus having fun? You know, he's back in his trailer. I think he's having fun. I'm like, it's just a dog. Let's at least focus on the children and the adults. And I do a lot of overthinking and worrying. And, you know, the more you lead, the easier it gets, for one thing. And then I worry about us going too slow, too fast, breaking up, because, like, not everyone wants to go the same speed or can go the same speed. And, yeah, it's hard.
But some might say that the ultimate of ride leading is writing a book about how to bike. And you just wrote a book called Urban Cycling, which kind of inhabits all of the aspects, so many of the aspects of risk and liability that I think a lot of people feel. Why did you decide to create that book? What was your genesis?
I mean, basically the same thing as forcing myself to lead rides. I want more people to ride bikes with me, and I can only reach so many people through leading bike rides, and this hopefully will have a farther reach. Mm-hmm. So my father just sent me a picture of it at a bookstore in San Francisco, you know, so that's more people. So,
So can you talk about, like, how did that idea begin to write a book?
Well, basically everything is through family biking for me, or even like biking. We brought our cargo bike down. I met Brock on the Palm Tree Ride.
That's right.
Which is how I was introduced to the Sprocket podcast.
Thank you, Sean Granton. Yeah.
Yeah. That's 2 years ago now, right?
Or was it just three? No, 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a family biker friend of mine who is also in our grassroots neighborhood Greenways group, where we advocate for, you know, safe streets in Seattle, happens to be next door neighbors with the editor-in-chief for Mountaineers Books. Hmm. And yeah, so I got the introduction through them, and they'd been having trouble finding someone for their bike commuting book. So
they already had the idea of a book.
So lucky. And yeah.
Mountaineers puts out good stuff too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and this is under their Skipstone imprint, which is a little more like cuddly and touchy feely, and
sustainable
living, I think you would call it, instead of cuddly.
It almost sounds like they had to convince you. Did they?
No, I can't say no to anything. I mean, which is why I lead so many rides. Can you co-lead a ride with me tomorrow? Yes.
So can you take us on the journey of actually writing the book?
Well, the bulk of the writing happened between like 2:45 a.m. and 5:45 a.m. when Facebook was quiet, which I imagine is the same for a lot of stay-at-home moms slash writers.
The magic
writers.
Hours of Facebook.
How old are your kids right now?
They're 6 and 8.
Okay.
The first rereading of the first draft, it was kind of all new to me because I'd been half asleep, for the bulk of the actual active writing. Yeah, you should think of a better story.
That's pretty amazing. So the next question is like, when's the last time you actually slept?
Oh, right. Well, that's the funny. I used to be a morning person, but like writing the book kind of like changed me into a night person. And I hope to go back at some point to my normal schedule of going to bed at 10 and getting up at 6 instead of going to bed at 2 and, you know, getting up when, you know, a certain number of Legos have been thrown in my face.
So when did it actually come out?
Last month.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
What was the launch like for you? Was this your first book?
Yes.
How did it feel?
Relief that it's over. But yeah, I mean, it's scary. I'm not very good at selling myself, and I need to get better about that.
That's why there are three of us here to help.
There you go.
So University Bookstore in Seattle approached Mountaineers and wanted to do an event. So I had like a reading. And that's the thing, even though I recognized every face except for two in the crowd, it was really, really scary. But that makes it easy. But then you think like, well, these
Why
people already
so
know. They don't want to hear from me. They already know all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It was fun. I'm not much of a public speaker. I do most of my advocacy one-on-one at bike racks or through open car windows, even. Like, people ask me, where'd you get your bike? And we'll talk, you know, for the 3 minutes before the light changes. And that's my comfortable way to inspire more people to bike.
So what did you learn while researching this book?
Well, a lot, like a lot of the chapters, it does cover a lot. Like, bike maintenance is not my forte. It is now. but yeah, so I did a lot of studying up and taking classes on bike maintenance, which is good. I took classes.
Yeah, there's more than a few words about bike maintenance in there.
Yeah, there are multiple chapters.
So I learned a lot about bike maintenance and just like the specifics of bike infrastructure and just how to word writing techniques and stuff was fun. Yeah, so I'd been wanting to take the LCI class, the League Cycling Instructor through the League of American Bicyclists. So I did that. And just taking Traffic Skills 101 before and like really like putting into terminology how you ride in traffic is fun. Like things a lot of you all probably take as common knowledge and it's just muscle memory and makes sense to do. It's kind of neat to put that into words and convey it to other people.
How was the LCI training?
It was awesome. It was really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My class was taught by Shane McRhodes, creator of Kittical Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Who I hadn't met in person before. So that was really fun. Yeah.
That's great. Wait, where did that happen down in?
No, Maine? He travels, I think, all around teaching most of the LCIs right now.
So how long is the LCI?
It's a weekend. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah, totally worth it. Yeah.
So what specifically did, I'm sorry, I'm like, what specifically, tell us, what did you learn? We need the curriculum.
Well, so Traffic Skills 101 is the, or and it goes by various names, whoever, like in Seattle, Cascade calls it Urban Cycling Techniques. And it's learning to become an instructor of that. So you just go through not even all of the drills. There's a lot of classroom time and a lot of writing time where they make sure you know how to do the drills and you just practice teaching the drills. And yeah, it's fun. Totally worthwhile.
Cool.
Are you thinking of taking it?
When I first landed in Portland, that was one of the first things I looked into doing, and then I sort of got swept away. So I haven't circled back to it yet. By life in Portland. Turns out there's a lot to do here.
True, yeah.
But yeah, that's something I've always sort of had on the back burner there. Thought it might be cool to check out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what I'll do with my certification. So if I wanted to teach my own Traffic Skills 101 and I met all the points, I'd have all the liability insurance. So that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, you know, just pick and choose pieces they want to teach. And you don't get the liability insurance, but you can still call yourself an LCI. You can still use their printouts. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, it's like, well, you didn't really need to do LCI to teach this. Hmm. But, you know, I like saying I'm an LCI.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
And I can team teach or, like, just help instruct with someone and maybe get paid for that. I don't know. That's always good.
So who would – I'm sorry, am I asking too many questions?
You go nuts.
I'm sorry, I'm like, I have so many questions.
Ooh,
I
can't believe I'm this interesting.
No, you totally are. I have so many questions. You have no idea.
Which can all be answered if you buy Urban Cycling.
That's there you right. Go. Well, yeah. And speaking of, who would you like to be buying Urban Cycling? I mean, you said that in your launch that you knew most of the people in the room, and I'm sure like they're there, one, to support you, two, to support cycling, three, to support Urban Cycling. Who do you think, in your deepest heart, who would you like to be buying this book?
Well, yeah, so it should appeal to everyone since, you know, every chapter covers something different from maintenance to biking with kids. One chapter on biking with kids, the heart of the book, I'd like to think. But no, it's not. It's like, so some people assume that it's a biking with kids book, but it's just, you know, any biking in an urban setting.
Is that just because you're so closely associated
with the
family
bike? Yeah, I do pretty
bike.
Much identify as a family cyclist. Biking multimodal, using the bus. I wanted to ask Brock if there were bus racks or bike racks on all the buses in Boston. I think there are.
Shoot, yeah.
You know?
Let's get them.
and like how to choose a bike if you don't already have a bike. I would hope that it appeals to people who want to get started, who don't already or who do already know how to ride a bike. I do like Ellie Blue's articles on how to teach an adult to ride a bike and how to learn to ride a bike. But so that's not covered in this. But so it just assumes you've already ridden a bike, even if it hasn't been for decades. And, you know, you're a little scared to get out on the city streets because you're not a teenager anymore. And so, yeah. And it's not women focused, but it's very woman friendly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
What would make a book woman friendly as opposed to focus?
Well, I mean, so it's not, it should appeal to everyone, but It, you know, I talk about women-specific bikes. Mm-hmm. Not that you need a woman-specific bike, but for me, I guess my dimensions are such that women-specific bikes tend to fit me better. But, you know, stuff like that. And, yeah.
Okay. But you're currently not riding a woman-specific bike, are you?
I feel like I should be on trainers, like pedaling. No,
It's a surly straggler.
Yeah, my surly
right?
straggler is. Yeah. Yeah, but my road bike is the a specialized Dolce Elite with little swirls and flowers on it.
That's what makes it women specific.
That's how you know, because it will have flowers and swirls. Yeah, my cyclocross bike has swirls on it, and yeah, I think there might be even a heart on that one.
Well, then you really know.
How did you get into urban cycling?
My whole life I've just biked when it's been easier, mm-hmm. pretty much, like as a teenager until I got my driver's license and I like threw the bike in the garage.
How old
and
were you when you got your driver's license?
16. Uh-huh. Yeah, probably like 16 and a day. Uh-huh. Like a good Californian.
And, okay, I was like, and you grew up in LA? No.
I was in the Bay Area as a teenager. Sure. But yeah, then in college, UC Santa Barbara is very bike friendly.
Yeah.
So off and on then. And then I'd always planned to bike with kids because a lot of people visit places like Copenhagen and Amsterdam and see kids on bikes and want to bring that back. And my mother was Dutch, and she's the only one from her family that moved out here. So I grew up seeing my cousin's kids on their bikes, knowing when I have kids, I'm going to do that. So I got the same exact Bobike mini bike seat that they all had and like stuck my baby in
really?
It the day he turned one and he just started biking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that had always been my plan. And I mean, it helps that he hated the car. And, you know, the more you bike, the easier and more fun it gets. And it was so for me, it was very gradual turning mm-hmm. everything into biking. But now, yeah, everywhere we go is by bike.
Just a note. So I used to work when I was at Oregon Walks. I got to teach the pre-employment training for a couple of years at the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, IRCO. And one of the things, you know, because there's that's one of the main intake organizations for all refugees and immigrants that have come into Oregon. And as part of this program, you're teaching a lot of things in terms of, you know, English and creating a resume and including transportation options. And one of the pieces, so I got to do the transportation options piece of the PET program. And one of the great, because I would come in on my bicycle, and part of the American dream is driving. I mean, for a lot of amazing reasons. I mean, cars, I'll just say, like, I'm sorry, but cars are amazing. They're amazing mm-hmm. tools, and they're luxuries, and they allow you to do so many things. And so I would roll in on my bike, and one of the great kind of breakdown pieces was like, hey, in your home country, where did you put your kid on this bike? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, we put him on the back. Oh, we put him on the front. We put him on, like, and it's just like everyone had different spaces where it's like, oh, this is where we put our children on this bicycle. If they had a bicycle, mm-hmm. except for, you know, there were some countries that the women especially would say it was not legal for me to ride. But anyway, so it was like that was always the kind of the convening moment. I felt like, so where do you put your kid on this contraption?
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to get everybody talking.
Yeah, because everyone has a different space for it.
Not
and they're
one,
all valid.
Not one solution to the mm-hmm. same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
One thing, I don't know if it happened here, a critical mass conversation, or if it was just going around critical mass on Facebook group, but one of the big questions I feel kind of resurfaces is what happens when my kid is old enough that they start, like, will they start rebelling against the bicycle? Will that be their rebellion?
Yeah.
Do you ever worry about that?
Yeah, I worry about that a lot. Yeah.
Can you talk about your worry?
I don't want to jinx myself, but yeah, I feel it's healthy to worry that that day might come. And I don't push them too hard to do stuff. And you know, it's a luxury to drive. It's also a luxury to be able to have an enormous cargo bike. So right now I mostly ride a surly big dummy long tail that my two kids fit on. I have a third kid fits on it, which is great to have an innocent bystander between my two kids. And if so, they want to ride their own little bikes more and more. And if they get tired, I can easily pop both of them and their two bikes on my bike and just carry the whole show. Mm-hmm. And like the second they seem tired, I'll offer, do you want to ride? And they'll usually ask before I notice. So And a lot of that, and me not forcing them to ride a little bit more, even though I know we're almost there, is that I don't want them to start thinking like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. And we also just got a tandem bike that I mentioned with all the Swift panniers on it that I put a trailer bike behind. So then we're all pedaling. It's a little more fun, I hope. Keeps them warmer in the winter. Mm-hmm. And they don't actually pedal all that much. But sure. The whole thing weighs 10 pounds less than my big dummy. So even though they pedal less or not at all, and someday I think they'll pedal, you know, I'm still in control. We're still all together. Sure. I think it's more fun than expecting them to be in charge and ride themselves everywhere. I hope. Mm-hmm. That's my theory anyway. But yeah, so I'm going to just like let them decide what bike they want to use, if they need a lift, if they're tired, and I hope they'll want to keep riding.
What happens if they want, they're like, just like you, it's 16 in a day, they want their driver's license. How do
yeah.
you feel about that?
Yeah, that'll be weird because I don't have a car anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, well, it. Love it, but we don't have a car. Sorry.
Don't know how you're going to practice.
Yeah. Huh, that was weird. I mean, when I turned 16, I actually started driving almost because my parents like made me.
Where was this?
It's in Salem. Mm-hmm. So just a town south of us here. But I had biked to school, but my sister was in early choir. And so as soon as I was of eligible age to wake up at 6 in the morning and take her there, they were like, so you're going to get that license, right?
Yeah.
The best thing that happened to me was her keeping the car when I went to college because it all just came right back. So. There's hope. And I doubt it'll happen to you anyway.
Yeah, and I think I'll get a little bit of warning, so I'll have time to adjust to the new normal when that time comes, maybe.
One thing that I've heard from a number of people, including elected officials, when we are talking about, you know, safe routes to school and aging in place and long-term planning, and I'll just say it kind of concerns me that this is what comes up, but at the same time, there's hope. When we talk about self-driving cars as an antidote to safe routes to school.
Put your kid in a self-driving car?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Not as
yeah.
an aside.
Oh, that's horrifying.
No, I know. And but at the same, yeah. And so like on one side, it's like, well, there are so many areas, new developments being built that are so summarily unsafe for kids to drive or to walk or bike across, you know, that there's literally a sea of cars that they're going across a major urban highway. You know, you think of so many areas, for example, in Atlanta, still, even with all of their some great advocacy being done, you know, that there are significant highways. And, you know, you wouldn't have had to have gotten a driver's license if there had been a self-driving car. You get to choose, and your sister gets to school, and everyone mm-hmm. gets choice, and you don't have to worry about a parent having to trade, you know, their two jobs or however many jobs, you know, to try to juggle to drive their child to school, which also is horrible. And we look at you look at the number of crashes that happen near schools, and a lot of them are older siblings driving their younger siblings mm-hmm. to a school when, you know, and they're surrounded by so many different interactions of so many different transportation choices of very vulnerable populations mm-hmm. who have, you know, who don't have all of their problem solving parts of their brains established, right. You know, like structurally. So how do we feel about self-driving cars? Can we just go there?
Sure.
Can we just talk about self-driving cars for a while?
Right.
Sure.
And well, I'll just say, like, also in this space, we're in the Sprocket podcast, Open Roads Broadcasting, Bike Portland talked about a week ago, had a really great conversation around technology and transportation and self-driving
oh, for real?
Cars came up.
Oh, I should listen to that episode well. Then.
I'm a big fan of self-driving personally. It seems to me, especially, you know, if we can do it in a way that encourages the flourishing of other transit options in high density areas, that it does solve a problem, which is human. Well, you're mm-hmm. trading human error for computer error, but computers will more consistently err. Than humans is
their
what I've found.
Their errors are consistent.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, just anecdotally from the type of sort of aggression and also just decision making that I've seen on the roads. I feel like Portland has gotten worse to bike in over the 3.5 years that I've been directly in downtown. So if there's a way to take away that wrong or bad decision making process, and I mean, even if you just take away the time factor, if somebody's sitting in a vehicle that says you're going to get here and you're going to get here at this time, and you take away that need to speed
it's
or
a,
that need to take that left
turn. It's a fixed point in time as opposed to like, oh, if I can just just beat this light, you know, at this fraction of a second, then I can make it to work, and you know, at this fraction of time.
Exactly. Early. Or I just see so many potential upsides as opposed to downsides to it. And the big one for me is just the potential reduction of human error. Because, I mean, even myself, I tend to think at times very singularly, and then we tend to just forget that there's also all these other interactions or people that are also trying to get to their thing, to do their whatever. And so for high density areas, and I've talked a lot with folks about this, just having like a zone, basically there'd be park and rides. If I could have it this way, just on the exit or the end of town, which says, hey, got a self-driving car. Great. You can come into town. Don't, here's the park and ride, and you're going to take public transit. So it would just be a flip that switches at a border. So you wouldn't have to automate everything per se. You could still have the American dream of going out and joyriding and hopefully your electric car at that point in time. but just having a really controlled network in the high density areas, with the intelligence that we've been able to see so far with driving car systems, from the likes of Tesla and also Google Car, I actually have been really impressed with what I've seen. And this cites back to an article, I can't remember if Bike Portland put it in or not, but they're still working on how to code bicycle interactions. And so there was a person, I think, in Austin, Texas, who was doing a track stand. And the Google Car would start to go, and then they'd cycle, and it would stop. And then they'd go, and then they'd stop. And so, I mean, if I'm going to have a car not hit me just because I'm track standing, but also the car doesn't get to go, I'm okay with that. but I'm really excited for it, actually. I think it's awesome.
It would motivate me to work on my track
standing. Yeah, not to say that, like, I'm, you know, if we get it down to an accessible price, you know, where, let's say, 95% of the population could do it, I don't view it as a replacement for safe routes to school. I view it as, like, a very strong supplement to it, if implemented well.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of variables out of the equation. You mentioned sort of the emotive decision-making or the emotional, the emotionally charged decision-making that happens behind the wheel. And I've certainly, I would have to confess to a certain amount of that when I'm behind the wheel. And just other factors of, like, you know, the whole, if I can drive this much faster, I can conceivably make it to my destination at this much earlier, which is a complete illusion. We never actually make it there any earlier than normal, or than, you know, than average. But it's, to me, it's, I don't know how to say this without sounding crass. A shit sandwich is still is a shit sandwich, you know. This may be a little bit easier to swallow, but I don't think it's an end-all, be-all. Mm-hmm. I like your idea of, like, organizing the infrastructure where, you know, you get to a certain point and, you know, especially in densely populated areas, you can't drive your car beyond that. I don't see our government in any form, like, being able to implement that without
I'm certainly dreaming here.
sure.
No illusion.
And if you decide to run on the socialist ticket, I'm right there voting for you, man. I'll stump for you.
Thanks.
But, I think it's also an illustration of the amount of, like, culture and social change that needs to happen in order to make this a viable solution. Not to just stomp on your dream there, Guthrie, but but in the meantime, like, I don't think it's the end all be all solution. Yeah,
Maddie, your first reaction was one of horror.
Yeah,
you know, I after hearing what Guthrie had to say, I feel a little bad that I haven't given them any more thought after initially hearing self-driving cars will fix traffic, because you know I'm of the mind that, you know, it's the same amount of cars. If you replace part of the human-driven cars, with self-driving cars, you still have just as many cars, mm-hmm. and it won't affect traffic whatsoever. But, yeah, I mean, the technology does sound fascinating, and having at least some of that technology, if not all of that technology, going into cars, while at the same time, and maybe even more importantly, getting fewer people driving cars, or, well, being in individual cars and taking transit and biking and walking, I think is a better solution to make everything run more smoothly. But yeah, I will start reading more self-driving car articles. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a new thing. And there's Elon Musk, who's behind a lot of it for Tesla, is sort of famous for making predictions that are way off the mark. Like, yeah, we'll have self-driving cars in 2 years. And that was, you know, a year ago. But I just, it's sort of at the point where there's been so many sort of movements within the U.S. And it seems like in terms of transportation, electric cars are something that's actually getting some decent traction.
Mm-hmm.
So from a planning point, it would be great to get on at the ground floor in terms of what that looks like. Mm. And if it's going to happen, have a voice in shaping what that looks like. Instead of just sort of ignoring it until it's right in your face and then being like, well, this is screwed. And somebody says, well, you could have been at the planning meeting, mm-hmm. you know, 6 years ago when we were deciding all of this.
I think on the other side of that, and I agree to a lot of pieces, I think that self-driving cars in terms of a car sharing model has some great opportunities for parking management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking of all of the cars that we might not need as a city. In terms of an urban cityscape, but I also feel like from a planning stage, I actually when I hear self-driving cars and planning in the same sentence, I honestly despair a little bit mm-hmm. because I don't necessarily think that at the same token technology will save us, mm-hmm. and I'll just say when
who will Steph? Well, who will?
Artists. I'm actually not joking.
Oh, I think you have a great point there, and I actually agree with you a lot. And, you know, we thought that the internet would save our society, and we thought that, you know, mobile phones would be the next, you know, great breakthrough in our social evolution.
And other people also thought that those were going to bring about the apocalypse, and neither are tools. Just mm-hmm. like a hammer is a tool, and mm-hmm. we just have to ensure that we are not relying on the hammer to save our own human flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I myself welcome our hammer overlords.
Yeah, well, it's a great point. Is technology masks our imperfection, and so yeah, it's definitely.
I think it both masks and exacerbates. Like, mm-hmm. for example, you know, if we have self-driving cars for when we need them, you know, it can be kind of a human. This can be a statement for aging in place when we think of paratransit. Mm-hmm. You know, what if someone who has limited mobility doesn't have to wait for 2 hours and doesn't have to go through a very elongated, literally obstacle course in order
to
demonstrate
several blocks that aren't designed for them to travel.
Right. Or I mean, literally there's an obstacle course to be able to recognize that they require paratransit so they don't have to go on fixed route. So these are great things. I'm sorry. But also, at the same time, safe routes to school, that actually, when you were saying I'm horrified, like that does actually horrify me because to some extent, of course, yeah, people do need to feel that they need to drive their children to school. But I feel like that is an opportunity. Walking or biking to school with your peers is that one moment. I don't know if you felt the same way. When I was growing up, walking with some of my friends, a couple of my friends, or walking by myself to school was the only unstructured, unparented, unsupervised time that I had to become myself. And I feel that when we silo people through cars, we have a highly curated environment in our transportation system that I think divorces ourselves from empathy. I think that empathy is the greatest challenge that we have as a nation. I'll just say, as 2015, here's what I feel my greatest distillation, that empathy is the greatest challenge that we have going into 2016, into this presidential election as a nation. And we have strong choices to make. And I think that when we have conversations around transportation planning And when we have individual conversations around our own behavior related to transportation, and we don't involve words like empathy and and thoughtfulness, that is a missed opportunity. That's all I got.
It's almost, did anybody ever read the book Last Child in the Woods?
No.
I have not.
What is this book?
Oh, it's the concept of nature's or the unstructured environment's impact on basically growth or coming of age, I guess, in a sense. So I was just thinking maybe the last child in the woods of 2025 will be the kid who walks to school as opposed to the kid who gets in a car. But yeah, I totally had that growing up moment as you were saying that. I was thinking back to the thousands of times I'd seen something cool or interacted in a way in which if you were just driving past it, you wouldn't. You know, and that's why biking's so great is you're going faster, but you have that choice. You see something cool, you stop, you go check it out.
Mm-hmm. And yet, like going back to urban cycling, we all live in an urban environment that allows us, and through other privileges, you know, allows us choice. And allows us to cycle, and yet it is a highly curated, structured environment.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about rural cycling, which I hope is your next book, you know, like how do we build transportation choice when, you know, in the woods, you're either. You know, as
how
a kid.
How do you do the Great American Road Trip on a self-driving car?
You go to sleep. You wake up in Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. That's also called Amtrak.
Oh, yeah.
I took that trip. but how do we, outside of a highly curated environment, provide for self-discovery? Does that make any sense at all?
Sure. Because the opportunity for self-discovery, I mean, I wouldn't say is completely absent, but it's certainly not quite as present when everything around you is structured. When, especially, you know, in the past 5 years, maybe more, there's such this concentration on making everything safe. And, you know, I'm not advocating for, you know, that we should all just be lawless by any means, but there's this concentration on security and safety that I think we have forgotten that in the realm of safety or for the sake of safety, we've forgotten that sometimes we discover a lot of things by kind of being afraid or not being afraid, but doing something that scares us, you know, or expanding our horizons in a way that we otherwise wouldn't have, because we are too concentrated on being safe. And you talk about a lack of empathy. There, not so much in the past year or so that I've seen, but certainly in most of my adulthood, there has been a concentration on kind of insulating ourselves, you know, and in also kind of isolating ourselves from the outside world. You know, you think of how many people are in their car, and this is just one aspect of it. How many people are in their car, like surrounded by a shell by themselves in their own world that they curate themselves. You talk about a curated or highly curated society. We also curate our own culture for ourselves, you know, and how many of those people just go home and try to curate their own space to their own needs without the opportunity to open up themselves to other people, to other opportunities, to other experiences.
I think that is such a great, like, to what extent is the self-driving car, which I think, again, has incredible potential applications, is not just a dog whistle for a disdain of public transit. Like, no one wants to be on a bus, but everyone likes the idea of being chauffeured by a robot.
I love buses.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you don't.
But there is this sort of cultural stigma against being on a bus. Maybe a lot less around Portland, but in America in general, being
but
on
even
a bus.
Still, this is a reason why we have the Max. I mean, I think that
the
light
buses
rail
aren't sexy enough.
That light rail was sexy and it was safe. And I do think that, like, I think safety is would be a great, like, standalone conversation. Like, I would love to have this conversation because I feel like safety politically
is a code word.
Safety polls really well.
Mm-hmm.
But safety, to your point, Aaron, exactly. Safety is not a shared, does not have a shared understanding in terms of definition. I think that everyone has a different idea and a definition of safety, and that everyone says, yes, I want safe streets, knowing, recognizing.
But I want safe streets in my own idea of what safe streets is.
I mean,
slowly waking up to the idea that, like, our idea of whatever, safety, infrastructure, utopia is not the end all be all. I think we're slowly waking up to this idea that my decisions that I've made in my own vacuum of my own brain are not necessarily the right ones. I can't make a decision in the vacuum without having other people around me to influence those things. Anyway, mm-hmm. Sorry, I totally cut you off.
No, that's great. I mean, I just feel like safety just means something different to everyone.
Sure.
And when we talk about safe routes to school, everyone believes, yes, absolutely, we should have safe routes to school.
Was there...
What does safety mean?
Was there an official in Portland that had equivocated that self-driving cars was the answer to safe routes or would replace safe routes?
No, I've just been in a number of conversations related to funding and implementation and long-term planning where when I talk about things like transportation choice and... Mm-hmm. And public transit and aging in place specifically, this comes up a lot in terms of aging in place conversations. People just say, well, I just can't wait for self-driving cars.
Like, let's not worry about it. Let's just wait for tech to kick in.
And that is when
kick the can down the road until technology.
Admittedly, that is when I start to generally despair. It's not the idea. I mean, there's also a lot of around self-driving cars and agency and risk and liability related to a corporation's capacity to profess a lack of liability in court versus an individual's who is a victim. There's a whole road we could go down there.
Hey, they're people too.
That's true. They're very big people. Thank you for joining me down this road.
Well,
like, self-driving cars, I think about it a lot.
This is a good time to mention your podcast real quickly. Why isn't anyone talking about this? And the impetus of this being?
Quite frankly, selfishly, the impetus was that there were a whole bunch of people that I used to see a lot in conversations and I just wanted excuses to hang out with them. We started talking about, like, social justice in the built environment. What are those intersections and how do we start talking? Because there's a lot of people talking about them, but there isn't, you know, how do we create a space where different practitioners of a lot of those conversations can come in and speak without a middle person and just be able to have some of those conversations. And we were, you know, honestly, so we have 10 team members total of the Why Isn't Anyone Talking About This podcast. And everyone, you know, because everyone's doing so much work that it's really hard. Like, at one point I was like, I hate to ask them to do one more thing because they're already doing so much. But then all of a sudden we're like, what should the name be? How often should it be? Does anyone have time? Like, what should we be even talking about it? You know, how often? How long? And then all of a sudden Justin Bury, who's the executive director of Community Alliance of Tenants, was like, on a planning conversation, he was just like, we're declaring a renter state of emergency tomorrow. I think that should be our first episode. And we're like,
yes.
Done. And the irony was, like, because it took us a long time. Okay, well, now we have to come up with the name and now we have to come up with all this infrastructure for real. That by the time we did the first episode, people were like,
everyone's talking about this. And I was like, well, they weren't 3 weeks ago.
Right. They weren't when we recorded this thing.
That's right. So yeah, so now it's currently every other week, and it's mm-hmm. however long people feel like talking. Yeah. and we're just going to see where it goes. And it's mostly just very exciting to be in this space that we are now talking about different things. And our most recent podcast episode was about what is creative placemaking.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier I was listening in on that. And, of course, you know, the first thing I key in is the production side of things. This is great content. But what I'm going to tell you about is how great the production was on this.
That would be Eric Klein.
Yeah, the little sound collage that he did right at the very beginning was really great.
I know, I was listening to it for like 20 seconds, and yeah. I was just like chatting him like, this is the best thing ever. He was like, it's really not that big of a deal. I was like, you have no idea how awesome you are. Thank you for name checking our editor, because he's amazing.
Well, we are just out of time. I had a game kind of plan, but we don't have time for that. So I'm just going to say,
what was the game plan? So that
I got this game from someone in my family. I got to tell you the story of how I got this game. It's a kid's game called Telestrations, and the impetus of this game is you draw a card and it gives you like a phrase. I think I use the phrase dog bag or doggy bag. And so you draw that what you think that phrase is, and then whoops, I just got a text.
It's your dog.
It's my dog.
I was promised food.
Where's my bag?
Peanut butter fudge, please.
You can't have the fudge, I told you.
No, it's just too delicious.
So then someone, you know, draws that, and they pass that to the next person. And then the next person, okay, sorry. The next person, like, sees only the picture. They don't see the actual phrase. And so then they draw, like, what they think they write what they think the phrase is. And then they pass that to the next person, and it goes on in the circle. And I was going to do that with our New Year's resolutions. Unfortunately, we don't have time, so our listeners will just have to imagine what that game was.
And we all had awesome New Year's resolutions. Yes. The best New Year's resolutions.
I couldn't wait to share with the world.
Yeah. But now she'll ever be a secret.
But now we're going to do mail instead.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
So, yeah, this first piece is from show supporter Patrick R. Chain, who says, thanks for the ongoing podcast and plethora of good stories and interesting guests. Several months ago, you had another set of hosts take the mic to do an episode of The Sprocket in your absence. What happened to these people? Is there another collaboration planned? Thanks again. Enjoy the end of the year and best wishes in the coming ones.
Hi.
We love you very much.
So, yeah, at least Patrick seems to love you guys. I'm sure everybody.
We'll take it.
I will say that is the most enjoyable episode of the Sprocket podcast that I've listened to.
That's because you didn't.
Because I didn't have to. I didn't like have to critique it while I listened
to
it.
There was that one.
I could actually just listen to it and relax.
Thank you, Patrick.
Next up from supporter Doug Robertson, he chimes in about last episode we talked about Sears Roebuck homes. I don't know if you guys have ever had any experience or heard anything about this. Someone had mentioned one of their
I have a friend who's living in a Sears Roebuck home right now.
I can't believe that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a Sears Roebuck home. Between 1908 and 1940, they offered them in 44 different styles. They included everything you needed to build the house right down to the pre-cut lumber, plumbing, electrical fixtures, and heating systems. So thousands of these homes still exist all over the country. If you live in a big city, you've been by or even inside a Sears home without even knowing it.
The Montevilla neighborhood has a lot of them.
For real?
Yep.
That's like right where I live.
I know.
I'm gonna knock on my neighbor's homes.
Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't that be a fun group bike ride?
Oh, heck. Yeah.
Ding your bell every time you go by one.
Now if someone could just lead that ride.
Gee, Maddie, if only someone.
Sounds like an Urban Adventure League kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Someone local.
Here's Sean Granton.
And lastly, from Johnny K., you had mentioned earlier about listening to our commentary for Premium Rush, but not actually watching the movie. And Johnny K. said, this year I didn't watch the movie at the same time as your commentary. I was not a big fan of this movie, and that was the movie Speed that we did a commentary of this year. And that was with Russ and Laura of the Pathless Pedal.
So,
so
good.
Yeah, you guys should check it out. It's pretty fun.
I definitely will.
He says, the movie was too predictable and boring. Anyway, your commentary was funny, and it made this episode worth a listen, especially when you commented on the various modes of transportation.
Yeah.
He also mentioned he'd never ride the bus again.
That should not be the takeaway. Do not ride the bus with Keanu Reeves.
That would so not happen with self-driving buses.
You're right. You're right. They would never get up to speed to arm the bomb, and then they would never have to stay up to speed. Well, any parting comments?
If you didn't like Speed, don't watch Atomic Train.
Oh, with
what
Rob
is Atomic
Lowe.
Train? What?
It was like a NBC made-for-TV movie, right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was at the movie rental place back in 1996 or something.
I remember this.
Trains.
So have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I was just thinking of other like bad movies related to public transit, which would convince you not to do something.
I know. I've heard Snowpiercer is an amazing movie.
It's all right. I mean, I think there was a lot made of it.
Mm.
And it, of course, with anything that like a lot of people are talking about, when I finally go and watch it, it never lives up to you know, the hype.
But are there also, are there any Star Wars spoiler alerts that anyone wants to?
Spoiler alert?
Yep.
I haven't seen Star Wars yet.
I haven't either.
Wasn't it so sad that they had the wars in the stars?
Yeah. My favorite part was where the movie happened.
I did actually go and see it, and there was a big line. I didn't go opening day. I went like the Sunday after. And there was a big line. We had bought our tickets ahead of time. And so we look at this line, and Anna and I are like, this surely is not for us. We've got our tickets already. So we walked right in. And, you know, we're looking at the tickets. It says, like, just hand this to the ticket taker, and they will scan your ticket, and they will let you in. So we did. And we realized, like, as the guy is scanning our ticket, that he's scanning our ticket at where the line ends. That we had just walked right past. So we had cut in front of like 50, 80 people. And like, but no one said anything because
it's Portland.
It's Portland.
They probably just thought you were watching a different show.
Oh, man.
We were there for I don't even know what other movie is out right now.
And obviously you weren't dressed up as Star Wars characters.
No.
Had you been, they would have let you in on it. And
I did sing Star Worlds instead of Star Wars to the theme of the Batman song, like the old 60s Batman. Star Worlds! Just to troll everyone in the line, and then Anna was mad. She's like, you're going to make everyone mad.
It's like they're there already. Yeah. Passive aggressively.
There's nothing we could have done to make these people happy. Anyway. Well, I would really like it if someone would maybe come over and read the show ending with me.
All right.
You can just bring the mic over.
Okay. Oh, ooh.
Don't step on the fudge.
I know, I won't. This is the most amazing fudge ever.
Oh yeah, we should pass that around.
Seriously. Okay.
I've already eaten half of it.
Thank you.
So the fudge is bifurcated into wax paper segments.
I'm taking a piece of the coconut right before I have to eat or have to read something here.
It's like you recognize that it's a bad decision and you have done it.
Oh, tell me you've never done that before. So usually in the past, we've had our guests give us a theme for how we should read these. Either in a character of sorts or just give us an abstract theme and we would interpret it.
I kind of like with a whole piece of fudge in your mouth.
All right.
Mm, both of you. I mean, if you want.
Okay. For the sake of our listeners, I held back on Jar Jar Binks.
Thank you.
All
right. Here we go.
More.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustained donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norbin, Doug Roberts,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wisinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Bruner, Dave Nose,
Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick R. Chain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Elderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista Skukis, John Wasserman,
Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy,
King of Division, Josh Zissen, and Richard G.
Woo!
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you.